I started in this business, rock and roll was real and pure.
Mr. Finestra, is there a problem with the document?
I started this company from nothing.
Right, and now we're selling it.
I'm talking about our dreams, man. You don't understand.
Okay, here's what I do understand, Richard. You're high.
Yeah, well, so what? It's a privilege to do this job, to introduce the world to new music, to shape the culture.
Richie, we're gonna be bankrupt in a month.
Going in a new direction, trying to bring us into the future.
While you're over there in the future, I'm here in the present, trying to keep the lights on.
Nick, we're about to turn a corner.
That's exactly what the Nazis told my Uncle Isaac. Showers, right around the corner.
I want fresh artists today.
I have something. I think they're pretty good.
Where'd you find them?
I saw the singer on the subway and I liked his look.
That's what I'm talking about.
Do you have any idea how screwed we are?
I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah, of course he's fine. He's always fine. Give me a try right
now. Our future, everything, it's all riding on this company.
You got a guilty conscience, and this is what you come up with? That's it. That's all I got. I promise I'm gonna bring us back.
Let's show people how rock and roll is supposed to make you feel.
Heaven knows they wanna break you.
It's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. So the highly anticipated drama, Vinyl, created by rock icon Mick Jagger and movie legend Martin Scorsese, along with Rich Cohen and Terrence Winter, premieres tonight on HBO. The new series takes us on a wild ride through the sex and drug-addled 70s music business at the dawn of punk, disco, and hip-hop, seen through the eyes of a record label president played by Bobby Cannavale, who is trying to save his company and his soul without destroying everyone in his path. Now, Vinyl also stars Olivia Wilde, Ray Romano, and our guest tonight, you know him best, and more recently from four seasons on The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire. His career has taken him to Broadway and The Lion King, teamed him up with directors like Tim Burton and Woody Allen, and found him working alongside a list of actors, which includes Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio. And joining us tonight is actor Max Casella. Max, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, David. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Great to have you on the show, and congratulations on this new series.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited about it.
I am as well. And you know what? There's not a lot these days that gets me too excited on television. It's kind of the same old, same old. As soon as I heard that this show was coming out, I think a lot of people are excited about a brand new series that's going to really drive people to watch HBO. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely. It's got a great, great pedigree.
Absolutely. So getting to know you a little bit better, I know you grew up in Cambridge, Mass. In the 70s. We're exactly the same age, by the way. And I know you went to school there. You loved art. You loved illustrations. You loved painting. What got you into acting? What kind of made you take that detour?
Well, I was like a kid in the 6th, 7th grade, and my thing was art, as you say. I was like art. I was painting and drawing. I designed the school T-shirt, anything like that needed to be like done for any school activity. I did the poster for it, and that was kind of like my thing. And then the public school drama coordinator, this woman named Judy Contrucci, who handled all the public schools, the drama activities, she came around the grammar school that I was in, and she said she needed a kid to play a role in the high school production of Pippin. And she had seen me doing some, like, mime shows and stuff. And she had worked with me in doing some theater games because she used to come around and play these games with the different grammar school kids. Mm-hmm. And she sort of plucked me out of that group, put me in the high school production of Pippin. And that was it. I mean, I was like, I was in front, first time in front of a live audience getting laughs. And, you know, I've been hooked ever since. So that was the beginning of it, kind of. And then I just started doing theater in Boston. And some local television stuff in Boston. Boston being such a small community of theater and TV, it's very easy to like your name to get around very quickly, especially if you're a kid. So I just started doing that. As soon as I got out of high school, I moved right to New York and went to acting school and started pursuing it professionally.
Very cool, very cool. And I know it was pretty soon thereafter that you got your first role in your early 20s, first small screen role, and it was in the TV show The Equalizer, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe that was the first. That wasn't the first TV thing, because I'd worked in the local
maybe national
TV channel. Yeah, that was my first international TV thing, was The Equalizer. And then right after that, I did an episode of, I think, Kate and Allie.
Kate and Allie.
Jane Curtin show. Yeah, and I was like basically going to acting class, working in a little theater, cleaning the place and doing running the lights and that sort of thing, and auditioning. And then during that period of time, bam, I booked Doogie Howser right here in New York, where I am now, and I've lived my whole life. That took me right out to L.A., where I lived for – I did Doogie for 4 years. I lived out there for a good 10 years.
Well, and that amazed me that, first of all, it's such a separation between church and state, like two moments in time that you were that kid from that show. And you weren't a kid. You were in your 20s, but you played a kid.
I was 21 playing 16. Right, yeah.
Right, exactly. And then when I see you, you know, doing Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire and all the movies and stuff, it's literally like two different people. I don't make the connection, which I think it could be a good thing, too.
In effect, you got to think about it this way, Dave. It's like I wasn't a child actor because I was in my 20s.
True.
But for all intents and purposes, I was physically a kid and was playing kid roles. So I did have two kind of careers. I had a child acting career, and then I had my adult career. So it is like I had two careers. I've been at it nonstop my whole life since I'm 12 years old. But it does seem like there are like two careers going on.
And you've been able to spend a good chunk of it in New York, which you just got to love.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, I'm a New Yorker. My parents are from New York. I grew up in Cambridge only because my dad was working there for a little while. I went to high school in Cambridge. It's Cambridge Rings and Latin. My high school buddy was Matt Damon. We grew up together, and a lot of people came out of my high school and did great things. But I've been in New York and a New Yorker since I'm 18 years old. And even when I lived in L.A., I considered myself a New Yorker. You know, and now to be on a TV series like Vinyl with such a great show, but to shoot it in New York City where I live is fantastic.
Yeah, you can't beat
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. You used to be like you'd have to go to L.A. to do that. Now I'm doing it in New York City.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool.
My wife and kids, my family is here. I don't have to go to Los Angeles or Vancouver or someplace like that.
Well, you want the family. You want the kids to grow up where you kind of grew up, and I think that's even more important.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And I know in New York you've done Broadway. You know, how do you like the stage compared to movies and television? I mean, you did a lot of Broadway and stage.
I did a lot of Broadway, a lot of off-Broadway. I love doing theater. It's a completely different experience than doing movies and television, and I would never want to choose one at the expense of the other. I would rather do much more film and television than theater, because theater is as great as it is, it doesn't pay anything.
Gotcha.
And you work your butt off, and you can make like $500 a week. It can be very, very grueling doing 8 shows a week. But, you know, I get to do Shakespeare, and that's where you got to go to do it. And working in front of a live audience, it just is nothing like it. And there's just nothing like it. And the camaraderie with a cast where you show up in the evening and you do the whole show straight through. There's nothing like that.
It kicks up your game a little bit. Yeah, it kicks up your
absolutely,
game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there are actors out there who I greatly respect, but just don't understand why they would never even put a toe in to doing a show, to doing a play. Like, why would not even try it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm very glad to be able to do both, but I wouldn't want to do just theater because it is, you can barely make a living at it.
Well, then in 2001, you joined The Sopranos. Iconic, iconic show. How did you get that part?
Oh, it was quite simply, I just auditioned for many different roles. I auditioned for, I did it for a Matt Bevilacqua part that was played by Lilo Brancato, and before he had gotten into his trouble. And then I auditioned for the Jackie Jr. part, played by Jason Sabone. But David Chase kept bringing me back. He knew me from Doogie Howser, you know, because he had a long history before The Sopranos of producing TV, like Northern Exposure. A good friend of mine that I had known since I was a kid was actually one of the writers on it. And he had introduced me to Terrence Winter before I had even gotten on the show and was really, like, helping me. So whenever I would have an audition, my friend Frank Grinzulli, who was one of the early writers and the producers of Sopranos, would kind of, like, catch me up to speed about the tone and everything. And Terry Winter would also help me out. And so it was only a matter of time before they finally found the role for me. But it took a lot of tries, a lot of different roles before there was the right one came along. And then once I was on, they kept me on. It was very, very good of them. They kept me on. I didn't get killed off.
I know. That's the one thing I was going to say. The other parts you mentioned disappeared pretty quickly. So the fact that you had some longevity right to the end, you probably thought
very nerve-wracking. Every time a new script would come out, you would read it with sweating bullets. You're like, did I make it through another one?
That's great.
You know, I remember back in the day when you have a fax machine, you know, the pages would come through the fax in my apartment. And I'd be like, slowly they'd be coming out of the fax machine. I'd be reading them as they were coming out, like sweating bullets, going, oh my God. Whoo, honey, I made it through another one.
That's great. That's great. Well, I did a little.
I've been promised by Terry. I wouldn't be killed in this one, you know. I promise. He killed me off in Boardwalk Empire, but not in this one.
Right. Well, I did a little prep, you know, because I watched The Sopranos last night, where the character Benny dipped Artie, the restaurant owner's, hand into his own scalding tomato sauce. Classic scene.
Yeah, yeah.
People remember that.
Yeah, that was a good moment.
But I mean, you jumped into a series that was pretty well on its way and pretty well regarded. That must have been pretty cool. James Gandolfini and Edie Falco and the people you were working with on the set.
Yeah, I was very intimidated. I didn't feel cool enough to be there by any stretch. Really didn't. But I was just—I didn't understand why I was there. I didn't understand it. But they kept me around. They just kept me around. I just, you know. I'm never particularly like a tough guy. I can't really play. I'm not particularly that scary. But Benny, I guess, had his own kind of goofy. A lot of those guys, they're just putting food on the table. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that's
they
right.
do these horrible things, but they're not. They're like regular. You know, they're just putting food on the table. You know,
and still to this day, it's
they're
a show.
Doing terrible things, but yeah, they're regular. They're just like talking about their wives and their kids, and you know that kind of thing. Taking care of their moms. You know, so.
But it's one of those shows you could jump into at any time. And it's also one of those shows that, you know, I wanted to see it come back as a movie, something else. But, you know, with the death of James Gandolfini, obviously seems less likely. But, you know, in some ways, I'm kind of okay that it wrapped itself up the way it did, you know?
Yeah, I am too. I mean, particularly without Jimmy around, I mean, we'd never want to see that ever. I mean, we never would. David Chase would never do that.
Yeah.
We lost not only a great actor, Jimmy, but a beautiful human being, just a beautiful human being. Just a short anecdote about James Gandolfini. When HBO gave him like a huge raise, he actually broke his nuts to give us, each and every one of us, a bump in salary. And that he worked his tail off.
That's cool.
To get us, all of us, more money.
He always, and I've read about this about him, he always felt it was an ensemble and everybody needed to be treated fairly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's a beautiful, beautiful guy. Such a, I just don't know what to say about it.
Yeah, he is missed. He is absolutely missed.
Yeah.
Well, you've done a ton of movies, too, and now you're about to embark tonight on a brand-new, highly anticipated series from Mick Jagger and Martin Scorsese, and that is Vinyl, and we'll talk about that next with actor Matt Casella, next on 720 WGN. Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to actor Max Casella on the debut of the new HBO drama tonight, created by Mick Jagger and directed by Martin Scorsese, and that is Vinyl. So very excited about this new series. Tell us what Vinyl is all about.
Vinyl is about, it's about New York City. It's about 1973. It's about a record label called American Century Records. It's about the president and founder of that label, Richie Finestra, played by Bobby Cannavale. It is about rock and roll, sex, drugs. It's about desperation. It's about passion. It's about the way New York used to be when it was gritty and dangerous and sexy and exciting and dirty. And
right.
What it really is about is it's about passion. It's about a passion for music. Everybody, and desperation. Everybody on this show is just desperate. Bobby's character is desperate. Richie's desperate to keep the company afloat, to find the next sound. My character, I get to play a character. I'm so happy with this guy. Julie Silver. I've never gotten to play a character so kind of close to me He's not like any of the other characters I've played. He's, you know, Julie Silver is a Jewish boy from the Bronx, grew up, wanted to be a musician, wanted to be a singer-songwriter, cut a few records. They never made it. Moved into A&R, which is Artist Repertoire.
Right. Yep.
That's, you know, at the record label to help to find new acts and develop
them.
And,
right.
And, yeah. And he's in his 40s now. A&R is a young man's game. He doesn't know anymore, like, what's hip, what's happening. He could tell you, he's a walking encyclopedia of music. He could tell you exactly the moment when R&B, rhythm and blues, morphed into rock and roll. He could tell you who was playing at the session where that happened. He could tell you who was on the drums in any given, you know, and who's on the horns in any given studio session. But he doesn't have a clue about what's music's going to happen next. And 1973 is a very fortuitous moment to
sure.
start to show him, because punk is about to explode. It's just exploding into existence. Disco is just exploding into existence. Hip hop is about to be born. It's just around the corner. And Julie doesn't have a clue about what any of this stuff is.
Well, I was looking
and
at
he's out on the street. He's if the company goes under, he no one's going to pick him up anymore. No one's going to hire him. He's going to be done.
Well, I was looking at this from Mick Jagger. He was talking about the fact that everyone was familiar with all the musicians' excesses of the period, throwing televisions out the window, excessive sex and drugs and all this sort of thing. And he said his observation was that the business people were really crazy. 20 years and numerous yeah. incarnations later, he created this show. And I think that's absolutely true. And I knew the show was originally going to be a movie that he wanted to span, like, you know, decades of the music business. But this was
right.
the one time during music that it was probably at its high point.
Absolutely. Yeah, in 1995 or 6 or something, like 20 years ago, Jagger went to Scorsese right after, I think, Casino, and he said, I want to make a movie like Casino, except not instead about, you know, Vegas. I want to make it about, we should make it about music and about the history of music in America. And it should be like a big, you know, 3-hour epic. And that had kicked around Hollywood for a while, until the point where I think Terry Winter came aboard and wrote a draft of it in 2007. But then 2008, the economic crash happened, and
right.
no studio wanted to make a 3-hour epic about rock and roll. So this is where HBO came into the picture and picked it up. And actually, it's much better in a series form, because instead of doing it, you can't really tell every story in 3 hours. So a TV series is a much, much better venue.
Well, it allows you to develop some characters, too, over time and
Absolutely.
Really get the story
so
out
there.
So
many great characters.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
many. Yeah.
Now, I spent about 10 years of my life in the music business, but it was in the mid-80s, more of the early mid-80s to early 90s. I worked for Sam Goody in Chicago and Minneapolis and Transworld Entertainment in New York. And I, you know, worked with all the major labels, Columbia, Capitol, PolyGram, Warner Brothers. And it was a blast, but I also knew in the beginning it was still the music business. By the time I left it, I could tell it was changing significantly, you know, from what it used to be. But
right.
I remember the stories that these record label execs and my reps
right.
would tell me, and the guys that were in the business about
right.
how wild the business was in the 70s. And
that's
I think
right.
and that this
right.
and the show captures
with the payola,
just
the out of control, the payola and the, you know, the gangsters and all kinds of people who had their hand in the promotion, the independent promoters, you know.
Oh, Max, I remember when I got phone calls when I was 17 years old, still, you know, I was a freshman in college and I was running a music store, and I get a phone call that says, hey, you know what? When Billboard calls this week, mention this album in the top 3. I'll get you concert tickets. I'll get you some free albums.
Right.
I'll get you
That's
this.
Exactly it.
And I was
That's
17.
Right.
Yeah. I'd be like, that's great.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the day and the day that Nielsen yeah. started taking over the tracking of what was really number one, number two, I remember the two Billboard magazines side to side that everything completely – what was number one was number 17. What was number two was number 30. It was
they
amazing.
They didn't even match up.
Yeah, no, they weren't even close.
Even close.
They weren't even close. So, you know, the music
right.
industry was kind of like that. And, there was a lot of booze and drugs and money laundering,
yeah.
which is really kind of the focus of, you know, he's trying to sell his business now, you know, and try not to screw everybody up at the same time. I just think it's a pretty cool and very true to life story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope you tune in and watch it. I mean, I think it's really, we've been getting some really good reviews from people in the music industry who's saying that, you know, Scorsese and Terry Winter, they've nailed the industry. You know, they really got a lot of it right.
Well, and they say that there's been critics that have said that this is one of Martin Scorsese's best films, they're calling it, because it's a 2-hour premiere. So they're really good stuff.
Yeah, Terry wrote a pilot, a TV pilot, and he got back to Martin Scorsese. Yeah, it's almost like that, almost 2 hours.
Can't beat that. Well, the 2-hour series premiere vinyl debuts on HBO tonight at 8 Central, and will also be available on HBO Now, HBO Go, and HBO On Demand. Max, pleasure talking to you, man, and look forward seeing the show. Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Please, I hope you enjoy it. I hope everybody enjoys it.
All right, thanks, buddy. Thank you. All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN.